morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. For those of you who may not be familiar with the policy of the United Lodge of Theosophists, you can find it on the yellow periodical at the usher's table there as you leave this room. But it is basically the guiding principle of the way in which the United Lodge of Theosophists operates all over the world. And there are a number of centers now around the world on different continents where these timeless, universal ideas are put forth free of charge for the independent consideration of those who are inquiring and beginning to ask the important questions about their lives and the lives of others around them with whom they associate. So that which binds us together here as an association of students and inquirers is a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And that similarity in the mind and heart of each and all creates a certain sympathy, which creates a bond of union that is in fact stronger than chains of steel. So having that as a basis of our unity, there is no need in this association for the outer markings of organizations such as bylaws, constitution, officers, dues. It is left up to each and every one to decide how and when and where they will help the work, if they so feel inclined to. But even though the bond of unity is within, it is obviously necessary for us to have a physical building or lodge in which to put forth these ideas in the world. So there is obviously a need for contributions in the term of time, service, and money. But even there, no obligation is imposed or implied. It is left to the individual. Because the ULT, or the United Lodge of Theosophists, puts forth the idea of independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. And that cause is the cause of human solidarity, of universal brotherhood. In fact, the lodge regards as theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And through this sympathy and collective consideration of minds from all different backgrounds and approaches, we assist each other in raising our understanding to a truer realization of the self that is the source and unites all, and a truer realization of its manifestation as universal brotherhood and interdependence in nature. So in keeping with this policy in Philadelphia, we have a number of weekly activities. On Wednesday evenings from 7:45 to 9 p.m., we have a study class in The Ocean of Theosophy, a textbook by William Q. Judge, one of the co-founders of the Theosophical Society in 1875. And we are considering for this coming Wednesday, the subject of the fields of operation of that universal law of karma. And in this study, we can see its many practical applications to the problems of our lives, as well as application to their solution. On Sunday mornings, from 11 to 12, There is a more formal presentation of the philosophy, so to speak, in the form of a lecture, a forum, which is a shorter talk, or a panel, where a few students will present the ideas from different points of view. But in whatever the form of the presentation, there is always ample opportunity for questions and answers and discussion, because the ULT puts forth the idea as part of that independent devotion that nothing is to be accepted on the faith, nor should we reject anything out of prejudice, but rather keep an open mind and check, test, and verify, or try to verify, everything you hear or read in the light of your own experience and investigation. So in helping along that process, there is a library that is open from 5:30 till 7:30 on Wednesday evenings, just before the class. And also in the center of the building here on the first floor, there is a book table on which are displayed the straight line and original writings of H.P.B. and William Q. Judge, as well as a number of other sources of the original teachings. And these are available at the cost of publication and shipping. There is no profit to the lodge made from the sale of these books. And they do provide the opportunity for individual study. So that is a process that you can investigate. There's a student at the book table there, and you may purchase books before and after meetings and during library hours. For starting next Sunday, though, we will be beginning our new overall umbrella theme for the month of March, which is the mysteries of the mind. And our first subject is probably one of those mysteries that we all have dealt with and all have wondered about, and that is our dreams. And the subject for next week is the Golden Gate of dreams. Dreams are a gate to a far wider experience that we might not necessarily suspect. And so this subject will be presented next Sunday. This morning, then, we are taking up the last topic of our umbrella theme for the month of February, which is the hidden laws of nature. And we are coming to a consideration of magnetism in man, the human being, and nature. And our format this morning will be that we will have a short talk, short form talk, leaving an ample opportunity for your questions, answers, and comments. We'll have that presented now.
About 4,000 years ago, the ancient Greeks, originally those near the city of Magnesia, and also the early Chinese, knew about strange and rare stones with the power to attract iron. Around 1600, William Gilbert, physician to the Queen of England, proposed that the earth itself was a giant magnet, with its magnetic poles some distance away from its geographic ones. Observing the fields around the magnet, and by doing other experiments with wires and magnets, Scottish physicist James Maxwell concluded with firm mathematical footing that these magnetic fields are included, that these magnetic fields also included in them electrical forces as well. He called the otherwise blank space an electromagnetic field. Today, Electromagnetic fields are a cornerstone of physics. Their basic quotations derived by Maxwell suggest that they could undergo wave motion, spreading with the speed of light, and Maxwell correctly guessed that this actually was light, and that light was in fact an electromagnetic wave. If you were to divide the universe into material and immaterial substances, then there is obviously a conclusive argument by which we have demonstrated that magnetism is indeed one of the great forces of nature and an excellent representative of all the natural forces, and that it is not only a real substantial entity, but an absolute immaterial substance. On Earth, we can usually detect these magnetic fields rather easily. Out in space, they are usually much, much weaker. But beyond the dense atmosphere, such forces have a much bigger role. And a region exists around the Earth where they dominate the environment. A region known as the Earth's magnetosphere. That region contains a mix of electrically charged particles and electric and magnetic phenomena, rather than gravity, determine its structure. Theosophically, near the end of the second volume of Isis Unveiled, H.P. Blavatsky lists what she calls the 10 items, which are essential to an overview of the philosophy. The 10th item is this: the cornerstone of magic is an intimate, practical knowledge of magnetism and electricity, their qualities, correlations, and potencies. Especially necessary is a familiarity with their effects in and upon the animal kingdom and man. A physician in the late 18th century named Franz Anton Mesmer would certainly agree with HPB. For in 1766, he published a thesis on the influence of the planets on the human body. According to the familiar principles of universal attraction, ascertained by observations which teach us how the planets mutually affect one another and our globe, and in the atmosphere, he asserted that those spheres are also exert a direct action on all of us by an all-penetrating fluid. Mesmer denoted this action by the effects of intensification and remission of the properties of matter and organic bodies, such as gravity, cohesion, elasticity, electricity, and others. He maintained that just as the alternate effects in respect of gravity produce in the sea the phenomenon of ebb and flow, so the intensification and remission of these properties, being subject to the same principles, cause in our bodies alternating effects similar to those endured by the sea. By these considerations, he established that the animal body, our body, being subject to the same actions, likewise underwent a kind of ebb and flow. He named the property of the animal body that renders it liable to the action of heavenly bodies and of the earth, animal magnetism. Paracelsus, in the early 16th century, some 200 years before Mesmer, stated that man possesses a magnetic power by which he can attract a certain effluvia of a good or evil quality in the same manner as a magnet will attract particles of iron. If we could list how many ways that the force of magnets, and electromagnetic waves affect our lives, for good and bad, the item count would be staggering. For example, have you ever thought of the number of electromagnetic waves that bombard your body every day. The FCC alone in 2011 lists over 15,000 full-power radio stations, 1,700 full-power TV stations, and on and on and on with low-power stations, educational stations, etc. And don't forget, Maxwell has shown that light is actually electromagnetic waves. But we're not suggesting that for one moment that you live in a lead-lined room in total darkness. Man is essentially a self-made electromagnetic transmitter and receiver, a mechanical engineering masterpiece, and a chemistry manufacturing and processing factory all rolled into one. Each and every cell of our bodies is alive and is harmoniously directed electromagnetically to achieve its particular duties. Certainly, we can confirm that ECGs will indicate the electrical activity of our heart, and an EEG will record thoughts manifesting as electrical activity in our brains. EMG does the same for muscles. Obviously, magnetism and electricity are inextricably mated and are extremely important to our lives and existence. For instance, we play music for personal enjoyment and therapy. We also play music to our plants to stimulate healthy growth. We use electromagnetics to peer into our bodies. And we use electromagnetics to treat a diseased body. Think for a moment of the tremendous power and magnetism and of just one idea. Many individuals have gathered around a man with a single, strongly desired idea held. Thomas Paine galvanized the American colonists with the need and blazing desire for freedom from the despotic authority of the British monarch. Gandhi, a single, quietly determined individual, was inspired with that idea that independence and freedom for the Indian people should be achieved through nonviolent methods. So with hardly any bloodshed, he and his followers, although they suffered, they willingly suffered, were able to rid India of the domination and injustices perpetrated by the British for centuries. These are just two examples that quickly come to mind. There are many others like Dr. Martin Luther King and Buddha. And we're sure you could probably name scores more, as well as a few on the darker side. Keep in mind that wherever there are atoms with electrons in motion, there is electromagnetics. Obviously, this is all of nature, visible and invisible, and that same tremendous power of a thought or idea, like Thomas Paine's, when masked negatively upon nature, could present as a destructive event. Paracelsus enlightened us about the force of magnetism in man. Mesmer used it successfully to treat the sick. And HPB told us to acquire an intimate practical knowledge of magnetism and electricity. It seems perfectly clear to us that the message has been sent and that we must, through study and otherwise, seek to expand our knowledge of magnetism, animal magnetism, electricity, and our undeniable connection. And finally, from the astronomer Johannes Kepler, my aim is to say that the machinery of the heavens is like a clock, and that in it almost all the varieties of motions is from one very simple, magnetic force acting on all bodies. As in the clock, all motions are from a very simple weight. Once again, the topic for today, the magnetism of man and nature.
Your questions are now invited. Yes.
So could we get, we're trying to discern then, what is the difference between electricity and magnetism?
What is the difference between electricity and magnetism? Fundamentally, there is no difference, because all forces that we observe acting on the physical plane or any plane of substance are fundamentally aspects or manifestations of that one universal infinite source of all life we call the deific essence or the deific principle, whether we call it God or the one life or the self of all. It's the same idea, as long as we don't limit it and confine it by giving it personal or conditioned attributes, because it is infinite and universal. So electricity and magnetism would be the manifestation of that infinite source through one degree of substance or another. In fact, we might say that spirit or force or energy or consciousness and substance are, as it manifests in form, are two eternal aspects or faces, if you will, of this unknowable, infinite, deific source of life. Because everywhere in manifestation we see matter and force. There can be no expression of force without a substance it's working through. There can be no substance that is not manifesting some degree of force or energy. So electricity, we say, manifests itself in a vivification principle whereby the inner idea or force is transmitted and expressed physically. So an aspect of electricity, when applied to our mind, is what we call will. We hold an idea in our mind long enough through the power of will, and it is vivified or electrified and becomes manifested as a physical form. If we have that so-called electrical force, electricity manifesting in our environment, but we focus it, we channel it through a wire or a capacitor or a series of wires, it eventually manifests as motion or mechanical motion or some kind of phenomena of energy on this plane. So that's electricity. Magnetism, which is very much the sister of electricity, because you still not see electricity without magnetism or magnetism without electricity, is how that vivifying energy has both an attractive and repulsive affinity and repulsive effect on those around it. So when an idea manifests as a form, as was said, it attracts to it or repulses away those of similar or opposite mind. And we know, as an electrical current manifests in a motor, for example, it creates a electromagnetic alternation of positive and negative forces, and it is the rotation, actual rotation of the motor is caused by these alternating electromagnetic fields. So that's the idea, that those forces cannot be separated. In fact, all the forces we see in nature, sound, light, heat, electricity, magnetism, as our physicists now understand, were taught by the ancients and eternal, and going back through all the civilizations, as manifestations in substance of that one force. So that's kind of an overview of our subject, which we... we'll go for it. Yes, come back.
If I am an electromagnetic force in this universe. What determines what I attract? The speaker mentioned effluvia. What determines the level of that I bring to myself?
So the question asks, if I am the human being is an electromagnetic force, what determines what is attracted or repelled by us? So let's return then to the idea that we are electromagnetic generators on a number of planes of our being, not just in terms of our ideas and our feelings, because we know if we walk into a room and we're full of love and generosity, we attract. But we can also repel people, and they'll be standoffish if we come into the room with the opposite feeling, whether we hold it at our heart or express it in our verbal, a nonverbal language. So our thoughts and feelings can certainly attract or repel certain experiences to us. But the very physical bodies, and we might say the inner electrical bodies, which science now recognize, is made up of we might say, atoms or substance in motion. And whenever we have substance in motion, we have that electrical magnetic energy. And so we ourselves are emanators or generators of this animal magnetism or animal electricity, which can affect those around us, not only other people, but everything we come in contact, the substance in the clothes we wear, the substance in the jewelry or the ornaments we wear, the people we come in contact with. Not only that, but our friends, companions, environments, workplace, they also have a certain electromagnetic emanation or radiation which cannot affect us for good or ill. And we think scientists are beginning to investigate all these different interactions. So what attracts things to us is the quality, the energy, the impulse we give to not only our thoughts and feelings, whether they're positive and negative, destructive or beneficial, and also the physical effect of the magnetic energy or magnetism we emanate from ourselves. Yes?
Edgar Cayce said that gravity essentially is a very similar phenomenon akin to magnetism, mm-hmm. which would imply that gravity, by the way, has a secondary pole, which modern science hasn't discovered. In 1984, there was a German crew that went to India, and they filmed one of the fakirs, one of the yogis, in the remote part of India, where this, in three different cameras from three different locations, where they watched this yogi levitate himself completely off the ground, and they, you know, this is 1984, so they already had this footage, you know, fully. So this just confirms that there is a secondary pole to gravity, and it confirms that the human body, the human mind, and by the way, this wasn't the only example in history of this being done, but it also confirms that the human mind, the human body, has the ability to generate intense electromagnetic / gravitational fields to be able to create a secondary pole to repel gravity.
Okay. So with this contribution, we have the basic theosophical teaching, which is now also a more recognized scientific one, and we'll get to that in a moment, that gravity is only half a law. The full law is the law of magnetic or electrical magnetic polarity. In other words, when the body to be considered is negative in relationship to the earth, which is positive, there's an attractive force, electrical magnetic. If you reverse the polarity of the object or the body, we will see levitation, and there will be a rising. Now, how does that process take place? It can take place through certain breathing, so yogic practices. it can take place through the transformation of the body through a extreme purity of thought and holiness of life. And so we see in the church documented hundreds of cases of individuals who were sainted because of their ability to levitate. And if you know anything about the process of canonization in the Catholic Church, you know that it is a strict scientific investigation and thorough collaboration of the factuality of what's going on. So these are not false reports. Now, they may attribute it to a miracle, but Theosophy says there is no such miracle. What we see is the operation of the so-called hidden laws of nature. If we understood those, we would be able to do the same. Jesus said, with faith, if with faith and understanding, if you say to the mountain, move, it will move. So the body can be levitated. Scientists recognize, certain animals, as well as human beings, certain animals have a natural magnetism, and they can spontaneously reverse their magnetism. Whales do this. By reversing their magnetism, they can rise or sink very suddenly. Their massive bodies, without having to swim forward or upward for hundreds of yards like other animals. Birds, if you watch the way birds fly, they don't run along a track like a jet, and gather enough speed. I mean, they're taking off and dropping spontaneously. Theosophy would say that there are two examples of that process in the animal kingdom. We can also do that. We know the levitating and depressing influence of certain ideas. We know the levitating and depressing magnetic influence of certain companions. Or other individuals, or other environments. We say they're toxic or, stressful. But what we are really experiencing in our nature is the electromagnetic effect that their thought and feeling and physical influence on us. There was a hand. Yes?
In terms of magnetism and electromagnetism, I'm thinking of that quantum physics slit experiment where you have the light behaving either in a waveform or a particle.
Yes.
So what part of our electromagnetic influence or our consciousness changes the behavior or the outcome of whether something's a wave versus a particle? And I'll open up to any physicists.
Well, yes, the physicists would say that light at one is both. It's electrical magnetic wave and it's a particle. And at one point it can manifest as one or two ways. It has the properties of both, which is the same, I think, as saying philosophically that spirit and matter are two aspects of the same reality. Matter is crystallized spirit. Spirit is etherealized matter, that their mass and energy are interconvertible. That's Einstein's formula, but confined to the physical universe. So what determines whether we are expressing the spirit, we're spiritual and physical being. So what determines which part of our nature we're experiencing? Well, Theosophy would teach every being in the universe is alive and conscious, we might say spiritual in its own degree. Wherever we see a physical being, there is a degree of spirit, intelligence, consciousness working through it. Where these are united is unique to the human condition, because the human condition has the presence of self-conscious mind, is a thinker who can both feel the elevating, levitating influence of spirit as well as the degrading downpull of matter. And so the struggle in the human condition is learning to balance these two, to not give in to the one, and to try to fulfill and live up to the other. So we might say our whole inner existence is an electromagnetic battle going on in our mind. But it is through that force and the exercise of our will to balance it out and generate one or the other that the world around us manifests. This world is a manifestation of the electromagnetic energy of our minds, of our thoughts. We change. Plato says, ideas rule the world. It's the same idea. In the back.
What could it be that for any individual, the amount one way or the other, could that be in any one lifetime caused by karma from past lives?
Okay. So we're going to, the question is, does karma influence the amount of electrical magnetic influence we give off? Well, of course, we're going to have more on karma Wednesday night. Karma is a universal law, so it influences everything. Oh, that's the blanket statement, okay? But it's the studying of the particular application of that universal law that makes life and knowledge so interesting. Because it is the particular applications that give us wisdom. And so we say it's a universal law of balance and harmony that reestablishes that balance and harmony wherever it's disturbed. And it has various fields of operation. For the human being, it operates as the law of cause and effect. As a man sows, that shall he also reap. So the bodies, the minds, the emotions, the psychic nature, the spiritual inheritance we have that is available to us of wisdom and insight, our environment, our family, our heredity, the opportunities we have with life are not by chance. They're not by miracle. They're not by the will of some outside, unknowable, incomprehensible God, but rather they are the lawful results of our previous actions as thinkers, as generators of causes, the effects of which we are experiencing in this life, either from the carryover of this life or previous lives, and will continue to experience in the future unless we set up new causes. So we are the generators of our destiny and the reapers of our past actions. So as a human being, we have a certain physical body that we inherit, and we have a certain electrical magnetic influence that we inherit from our previous efforts as well as from our ancestors, our progenitors, our family on this plane. And there are actually families in the East that preserve a very straight line of heredity because they try to preserve the electrical magnetic powers and abilities in that family that can manifest, the Fakirs being one, where they seem to be born with an inherent, very strong animal magnetism, and they can look at a snake, and the snake will fall down and go to sleep. They can walk in a wild woods, and the animals won't bother them. They seem to have great influence there. So that's what we all are electromagnetic generators. We all have animal magnetism. Some of us have it very strongly. Because of the power of our will to generate that force, we're very determined, we're very focused on a certain idea. And some of it have it because we're almost permeated, we're saturated with it, and that can be a negative because it's a magnetic. It attracts, so it makes us extremely sensitive to the thoughts, impressions of our environment and others around us. So it's the excess or deficiency of that force within us, which is the result of our previous actions, that creates the difference. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Your hand was up. Sorry. Yeah.
We talked about the staggering amount of the electromagnetic fields coming from TV stations, radio that weren't here, 100 years ago, and. And all of these are bombarding us at any moment. But this energy is still part of the same universal energy. It's only manifesting in this modern form, but bombarding us. And I wonder, is this necessarily inhibiting our own the energy that we generate, the our own electromagnetic fields, or is it necessary, or could we perhaps harness this energy, and could it be a good form of energy?
Well, it's a very good question, because it was spoken of the natural electromagnetic forces and fields around the Earth, and there are actually scientists that set up these magnetic detectors at different points around the Earth and can read the electromagnetic rhythms of the Earth, just like we might read the electrocardiogram of an individual by putting limbs and electrodes on their arms and across their chest and legs and so forth. And they can see that there's a certain rhythm, activity, but that electromagnetic activity is interfered with, scattered, intensified by the ocean and bombardment of all the technological electromagnetic waves we generate. Now, they didn't come out of nothing. They were created by human beings. We create that physical environment. So we are, by our thoughts, we are tremendous electromagnetic generators of ideas. Not just of ideas, but of actual force and influence in this world. So it can be used in a very destructive way without knowledge or for the wrong reasons, or when generated with control and understanding and the right motive, it can be a very protective influence. And because we are fundamentally spiritual beings and in our very nature are beyond the touch, cannot be affected, destroyed, or harmed by these all these electromagnetic emanations, because we are essentially one with that divine spirit we spoke of at the beginning. Because we are essentially gods in essence, or spirit in essence, we have the unlimited potential to generate force. What determines how strong that will be, how protective will be the ideas we hold. So it can't really cannot really detract from or slow down our spiritual growth, but it could temporarily slow down our physical and mental evolution because of the restrictive circumstances we create for ourselves by those thoughts. In the back.
Well, what about, they talk about the concentration of electromagnetic forces, like in the Bermuda Triangle, and there's one up off the coast of Alaska. So is there, this has been going on for hundreds of years, about the planes and the boats disappearing. What could that be about?
Well, the physical body, just think of the physical body. The philosophy teaches, and those who experiment with both in the previous centuries with animal magnetism, hypnotism, as well as our modern investigators of electroacupuncture and so forth, they recognize that this animal magnetism or light energy, because they now can detect it through various photographic techniques, emanates from the head through the eyes and from the fingertips and from the feet. So hence the effect of the laying on of hands and the hypnotic, almost mesmeric influence of gazing at someone. The animals, certain animals can gaze, like the snake can paralyze its prey not to move through the gaze, and certain animals you stare at and it really upsets them. So there's a certain magnetism or energy that's transmitted, released through certain areas of our body. Well, the Earth is a living entity too. It's a body. It's as much a collection of conscious intelligence of various degrees as our physical body. It has its animal, its plant, its vegetable, its mineral, its skeletal system, its nerves, its so forth to speak. And so there are natural outlets for this electrical magnetic energy. The two strongest, though, are at the poles, the so-called electromagnetic north and the electromagnetic south, where the energy sort of comes out and returns. You see those diagrams. But there are other points, and wherever they are released, there's a certain accumulated attraction or electromagnetic energy that's experienced. And the commenter was saying how scientists are beginning to detect these in different parts of the world. There's also another one mentioned in the philosophy, and that is in, you might say, in Tibet, in that part of the Gobi Desert, which in the traditions of people is called Shambhala, or it's sort of described as almost a paradise on earth, but it represents a coinciding with that location, there is an outlet of tremendous electromagnetic influence in that part of the world. So that would seem to be part of it. But we want to keep all these ideas are discussing. They open up our minds to the magnitude of the universe and how interesting it can be for our study. And there's so many. But we don't want to miss the opportunity of seeing how much relevance this has to the relationship with our neighbor or our family. And so we want to keep in mind that we said that we are electromagnetic influence. But this not only influences this life, but it has a powerful effect on our reincarnation. We might say that our thoughts are things, and they have a certain electromagnetic potency and influence. We discussed the fact that one can generate certain thoughts that create and attract tremendous movements among people. But our thought actually generates electrical force that it can press the substance around us. And this can be detected by scientists now. We know that even touching something leaves a certain electromagnetic signature or presence on that can be detected later. So when we set up thought, these become seeds of influence, electrical magnetic influence. And by the power of these thoughts and their nature, whether they're earthly, the kind of force we give them, we actually set up electromagnetic, quote, threads that pull us back to this life in a certain condition. Just as we walk into a certain room and we feel a certain electromagnetic affinity for people, we just find ourselves attracted to them naturally or repulsed by them. We do that with our thinking. Also, love is a tremendous electromagnetic force. We know that. It is love that binds us to our families and our friends. But it is also that power of love that brings souls who have lived and loved and worked together in previous lives together again. Sometimes in a series of lives, sometimes after many lives, but we are constantly coming back and working with and associated with in different degrees of intimacy with those we've loved in the past. But hate also is also a tremendous attractive force, because hate as a repulsive, destructive force in nature sets up that disturbance which karma has to balance. And the only way it can balance it is by bringing us back to the very conditions where we set up the disturbance. And so we find ourselves drawn back in life very often with not only those we love, but those we have hated in the past. Sometimes these are even in the same family. And sometimes they are in the same workplace or the same classroom. But we are drawn back to those who we have to settle a debt with. We owe a debt to. There has to be a balancing. And until that is done, that disturbance hasn't been neutralized. In the back.
Yeah,
An interesting study that any individual can do online is researching the ley lines, L-E-Y. It was a British finding that there were connections between the various standing stones, but it's now been taken on to connecting it to the pyramids and in Egypt and in South America.
Yes.
So it's an ongoing scientific study.
So the ley lines. But just as there are ley lines of attraction on the Earth, there are ley lines of attraction and communication between individuals. And this has to do with our karma. But we attract to us. There's a lot of popularity now. Some books written on the law of attraction. This is not a new idea. Okay. It is based on that electromagnetism of our thoughts. By the way we think and feel, we attract to us the very conditions we have, the people, the circumstance. We attract what we call success or failure, obstacles or benefits, by the conditions we've set up, by the power, the electromagnetic power of our thought. But in this whole process of evolution, if I pick up this piece of paper and read it, or if I pick up a fork and swallow some food and digest it, your electromagnetism is impressing the electrical magnetism of that substance, as well as being impressed by it. And it leaves us and it carries that impulse. Well, if our electromagnetic impulse is very negative and carries all our harmful thoughts and feelings, because that's the nature of our inner being, then we give a retarding influence to the progress of evolution for that substance. On the other hand, if we give it an elevating impulse, a spiritual impulse, so to speak, it helps lift up the intelligence, the spirit, the magnetism in that being. Yes?
Well, it seems that in conclusion, we thought of Benjamin Franklin's experience out here in Fairmount Park and how he set up an insurance company to provide people with a means for grounding themselves, to protect themselves,
yes,
from the destructive effects. By analogy, do we have anything as human beings, as thinkers, by which we can ground ourselves to protect ourselves from, as this was just brought out, we're being bombarded with all kinds of electricity.
Yes. Well, certainly the best protection we have is a clear motive, a clear conscience, the right thought and feeling. The more positive we make our nature, the more active we make our nature, the less sensitive we'll be, the less passive we'll be to the influences of others. The more we entertain and permeate our hearts and minds with positive spiritual ideas and things, the more will be the protective shield we put ourselves or we put around us that will protect us from those bombarding energies of all different kinds around us. But we did want to, since you brought up Benjamin Franklin and we've already mentioned Mesmer, we did not want that to pass without pointing out that, yes, we owe to Benjamin Franklin many discoveries and applications of the power of electricity and magnetism. But when Benjamin Franklin represented this country into the French in the 1790s and was our diplomatic representative there and trying to maintain the delicate relationship between the French and the new American colonies, which were still very vulnerable, he had the opportunity to sit on the scientific court that was judging Mesmer. And if anything, you would think someone who understood the nature of electrical magnetism would have defended a fellow scientist who was only investigating it on that plane. But instead of defending him in front of that court, he let the opportunity pass without defending them, and in a sense did a disservice to that, rather than letting his credibility. And whether his motive was he really didn't understand it, or he was just trying to preserve diplomatically the balance between the French and the Americans, we're not going to judge. But the point is that there was an opportunity for him there, and the history of magnetism and research in this century might be further along if it wasn't for that. So we did want to put out there that this is a field that, just as the scientists are investigating it, you can make a stealth fighter now and put electrical magnetic current around it so that it will not only repel and be invisible to the electrical magnetic rays of and radiations of radar trying to detect it, but because of its electromagnetic polarity, it will rise, it will accelerate upwards much quicker than a plane that doesn't have this type of electromagnetic current around it. So just as scientists are investigating that and applying physically, we have the opportunity every day of our lives to do the same things. Choose the right diet, choose the right food, choose the right water, choose the right air, choose the right conditions, choose the right friends, companions, reading material, what you're watching on TV, what you're exposing to yourself, because all of these things have an influence on you, and you will influence them. So we are never for a moment without the opportunity of applying this principle in our lives. Yes, in the back.
And as to how we affect others and they affect us, what we've heard in these rooms is the idea that hatred never ceases from more hatred. That will just intensify it. Rather, hatred ceases from love.
Yes.
The balancing attraction. So when we're in a situation where we feel the ill will coming toward us, the best we can do is ascribe the best toward the other and wish them well.
Yes, that was stated by Buddha. But Jesus said, resist not evil, let it flow through you. Electromagnetically, why don't you want to resist evil? From an electromagnetic point of view. Yes?
You set up a force that has to push back against you. So
yes.
The stronger you push, the stronger
right.
The negative force coming back.
Yes, if they have a swinging door and you push against it, how does it react? It pushes back on you. You back an animal into a corner. What does it do? Attack. You accidentally bump into another individual you didn't mean to. What do you say? Why? Because you intuitively expect there to be some kind of reaction, and you want it to be understood that it wasn't intentional. So when you resist, or when you push, try to repel evil, it only falls back on you that much stronger. But to be in that place of, as Jesus would say, acceptance, of love, of generosity, of kindness, that neither judges nor rejects, and you just let it flow on you, it will disseminate itself, and by the power of your magnetism will change its nature without having to resist it. It's the key to what Martin Luther King applied, Gandhi, Jesus, Buddha, all those centers of individual force, those human beings who changed the world, because they understood that's we're not going to say it's a secret, but they understood that principle and knew how to apply it. But each one of us can do it. Yes.
Those individuals were centers of individual force. It was also said by the speaker in the beginning that there are centers of the United Lodge of Theosophists all around the world. And one thing that we read in theosophical literature is the ULT is in place to follow and teach the lines laid down by HPB when she was here. Are those lines laid down? Is that consistent with this discussion on electromagnetism?
Well, the lines laid down are both physical and intellectual. The lines laid down are guiding principles of thought, which we find expressed in some ways in the document of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, but we also find it expressed in her writings. The electromagnetic lines laid down are the principles by which, if we follow, we will attract to us that nucleus of universal brotherhood by which great reforms and change in the conditions of humanity can be brought about. But it also, they also are electromagnetic, we might say, lines of force, centers of attraction. And as we know, she traveled throughout Asia and Europe and the United States, South America, up into Canada. And many of those centers that she contacted are some of the concentrated centers of theosophical work in the world. So we invite you next week. We're going to discuss with the first of our subjects on the mysteries of mind, the Golden Gate of Dreams. Our meeting's adjourned.